Welcome to the Everything Coworking Podcast, where you learn what you need to know about how the world wants to work. And now your host, coworking space owner and trend expert, Jamie Russo.
Welcome. Thank you for joining us today. I have a returning guest to the podcast. Mike Everts is joining me today. And the last time we had Mike on was episode number 73. So this is 154. We are going back a ways. And at that time, Mike was running Shared Space. He's the co-founder of a co-working space with locations around Atlanta, Georgia. And Michael sort of took a turn and evolved his role. He was always a little bit super into his co-working software management platform. I remember him telling me that Office R&D was doing sort of a US tour and they were stopping by Shared Space to visit with Michael because they loved his feedback. And then Michael decided that was his calling and he has joined the Office R&D team. And he is now the US regional manager for Office R&D located in Atlanta. Michael is also a fairly new proud puppy dad. So if we hear any interference apologies in the background, exactly. Michael, thank you for joining me today.
Yeah, absolutely, Jamie. So glad to be back. I think it was, you know, almost 2 years ago when we last did this. So it's great to be talking to you again. Absolutely.
Yeah. So Michael's episode number 73, if you haven't listened to that yet, Michael shares some really great tips on conference room technology. And we're probably going to update that a little bit today. Michael is coming to us with his insights on COVID conference rooms and community based on some Office R&D data and what he hears from the marketplace. Michael's in a really kind of neat position of talking to operators all the time from around the world. So I asked Michael and the Office R&D team if they would be willing to do an episode with us to share their insights around what's happening. Because I know for me, the thing I always want to know is like, what's happening in other parts of the world? Because we've all just experienced the same pandemic and the same crisis. But, you know, some of us are coming out of it, you know, sooner than others. I'm in California and we are moving slowly on reentry.
Atlanta has been moving fast.
Yeah. So he's going to share his insights and some of the data that they're seeing from around the world. But episode number 73 was great on, you know, sort of normal time conference room technology, if you want to go back to that. So Michael, thank you. And I'll turn it over to you to kind of give us an intro and dive in.
Yeah, absolutely. And just for those people listening in, we will provide a recording of this with slides. So I'm currently talking over a slideshow and I will do my best to describe any pictures or graphs we're talking about. But if you want to download this, you could always get it from Jamie's Everything Coworking website.
Yeah, we'll remind you of that a couple of times. If you go to everythingcoworking.com/episodes/155, we will have the download for the slides. You can always, you know, reach out directly to Michael or myself to grab them, but they will be available. So Michael's going to talk through, we'll both make sure everything he says is clear. But if you want the visual to go with it, you can definitely grab those slides.
Yeah. So I'm going to start off by talking again, just kind of the initial effects that we've seen on the industry from COVID. It is June right now. So COVID hit us in March, just a few months ago. But in those couple of months, we've seen some pretty big repercussions across the industry. Just to be perfectly blunt, you know, across the board, we've seen a drop in revenue with a lot of spaces, occupancy, and space utilization. Largely just due to the pandemic, people aren't as willing to come into the office. We've seen a lot of companies that are restructuring their revenue streams, dropping product lines that aren't working as well, changing others, and even adding new product line like virtual offices, which we'll talk about in a little bit, and virtual memberships. We're seeing spaces, really just do complete facility reconstructions and improvements, adding in technology to improve their space and make it more safe so that people trust coming back to it, and many safety procedures that are going to be required to reopen these spaces. You know, unfortunately right now, any place that brings together a sizable number of strangers is a top candidate for where people don't want to be. There's a lot of unknown right now, and people really don't have the trust to go into a co-working space or an open space where they're going to see a lot of other people right now. But more and more people are starting to crave that. At the same time, I truly believe that this industry is uniquely equipped to handle this crisis. Any space that has open areas is dealing with this right now. And you know, due to a combination of the technology that co-working spaces use, the marketing that they have, as opposed to a traditional real estate spot, you know, a traditional real estate office, I think it's going to really, really help kind of just accelerate people getting back into the office, feel comfortable getting into these co-working spaces. So yeah, that was just kind of a quick intro as we dive into the data. Jamie, anything else you'd add to that, or you think I can?
No, I think that's right. I have a really positive outlook as well for the reasons you mentioned. I think the other thing I would mention is the control that we have over the physical space, and the, you know, teams that we have on our side to help us keep the space, you know, comfortable and to your point, you know, trusted by our members. And if we can communicate that and have the, you know, the things in place and the tools that we need, which we're going to talk about that, you know, today, I think that's all really positive. And it, you know, may take a little bit of time to get back there, but I think the future is bright.
Absolutely. So I'm going to start talking about some of the just data that we've pulled from our system, really specifically looking at both revenue and meeting rooms in these spaces. We took data starting from January all the way to May, just to see how that revenue has fluctuated. What we've seen is that from February to May, we have seen, you know, a drop in revenue among spaces, roughly about 20% across the board. And that's from people canceling memberships. That's from people not booking as many meeting rooms. But you know, that drop off has stopped in May, and we feel that as time goes on, that's going to start to have positive growth, in terms of revenue. Now, where things are very different is in meeting room bookings. Compared to February, meeting room bookings in May have dropped by roughly 90%. So across the board, unfortunately, we are seeing a significant drop in meeting rooms booking. And this is, you know, people don't necessarily feel like they can book meeting rooms right now. A lot of co-working spaces just have their meeting rooms blocked off. And there's just a lot of kind of unclear rules about meeting rooms. And so, yeah, right now meeting rooms have dropped off quite a lot. And this extends to events as well. We're seeing almost a complete drop off in terms of events. And we, you know, we have some partners that are in Asia that we've kind of been looking forward to see what kind of events they have started to have. And they really never started having events, and they're now China's experiencing a second wave, apparently. I think they're closing down parts of Beijing right now again. So we aren't really seeing events in a physical sense after this COVID has hit. And that will come back without a doubt, but it's gonna take some time for that. What we have seen is virtual events, workshops, webinars, just take an insane, you know, rise. Every single week you're seeing more of these. You know, I know, Jamie, I know you guys have been putting on a lot of these virtual contents that have been really successful, and more so now than ever before, people are embracing digital events. And we have to imagine going forward post COVID, some aspect of digital will always be expected in your events going forward. That's just what people have gotten used to now, and the convenience is really hard to beat.
I think there's some upside there too, which we'll talk about a little bit later in your data. Michael, does this include Asia data, the meeting rooms? Like, is that so?
This is data from across the entire world right here.
So if I have a meeting room space and I'm just reopening, I should expect there to be some gap of time before I see a big influx of meeting room requests. I do think this is another one of those things that I think has some upside, but it's hard to predict when. There's a lot of uncertainty about when that's going to kick in. You know, you and I were chatting about the GWA virtual conference from a couple of weeks ago, and you know, all the corporate folks were talking about, like, look, we're going to need space for people to come together, and that, you know, will be dispersed. That won't necessarily be at the, you know, corporate office. And so I think that opportunity is there, but to your point, and we heard this from the folks on the conference, that was one of my big takeaways was like, yeah, they're really nervous about the safety of third spaces.
Yep.
And I think they're really trying to figure out how do we vet, how do we let our people vet? And so that communication around your protocols and all the things you're doing will be pretty critical in terms of getting folks back in. I mean, we do see, and to your point about events in the community manager Slack group today, somebody posted and said, we had a request, you know, for an event. How do I think about, can they be socially distanced?
What did you
how
tell them?
I didn't yet. This just came up and they said their, you know, meeting room holds 100 people. The request was for 50. It's seated. So you should have to do, you know, kind of a layout to figure out, is it enough space? And the things that I didn't have time to respond to. Also, how will people enter? Can you keep people 6 feet apart when they're walking in the door?
From a legal perspective, you know, is that something that they need to worry about or think about and plan for? Absolutely. But, you know, I think what you said with a lot of the corporations in that third space, more and more we're seeing these corporations, especially after COVID, de-densify. They have these large corporate headquarters that right now and for the past 2 or 3 months, no one has been in or very few people have been in. And it's their largest, you know, it's one of their largest costs that they have every single month.
Yeah.
And so what we believe will happen is that they will shrink their corporate headquarters and move more to a hub and spoke model where, you know, you have a dedicated corporate headquarters and then spread out across, you know, the country or the world, you have these smaller co-working offices that can be spooled up very quickly. And we'll talk about this more in a little while, but that is going to only accelerate. You know, that's more focused on private office than meeting rooms, but that is one of the big positives of this is just their reliance on co-working is going to continue to go up post COVID. All right. I'm going to jump on to the next slide. So I mentioned this earlier, but, for our operators, meeting rooms have been the second largest revenue stream, after, just traditional memberships, whether it's a hot desk membership or a private office lease. One thing that, you know, we're also realizing is that even, you know, in a couple months when the meeting space starts getting utilized again, the revenue per square foot is going to be affected. A lot of places are putting capacity limitations into meeting room space. So a meeting room that before could sit 12, you can only fit 5 in now. That needs to be taken into effect. As well as a lot of co-working spaces are blocking off chunks of time before and after bookings to ensure that the room has been properly cleaned. That wasn't something that you had to do with every booking before. And because of that, that's going to shave some bookable time off your meeting rooms.
Michael, quick question on that, because that came up in the Slack group today. Also, does Office R&D allow a way to manually do that on the back end to block off that cleaning time?
Yeah, so we call it a buffer time, and a lot of the co-working softwares do. But yes, essentially, and I hope they do, you know, post-COVID, it'll be even more important.
Yeah.
But yes, we let you set a buffer time. So if you want to say 30 minutes prior to every booking, there's a, you know, a blank spot that the customer is not charged for, but no one else can book during.
Yeah.
Absolutely, we support that. And yes, I mean, that those kind of things are just going to make your customers feel more confident and trust you even more, which is really what this is about, is reestablishing trust in your space.
No, I think that's right. We just booked an Airbnb, and I don't know if it's a requirement. I'm guessing it's some sort of legal requirement. There's a 24-hour buffer on the front end and back end for the booking so that they can, you know, do the full cleaning and let the surfaces, you know, be exposed.
I think it's good, germs. It's good right now. I mean, I'm glad. Yeah. I'm glad that spaces are doing that. You know, and you know, speaking of cleaning, it's just the ways that spaces can get out in front of this, market this more. Again, we'll talk about this in a minute, but it's just so important to establishing trust and getting customers back into your space.
So meeting room revenue sounds like we need to plan that that's going to come back slowly and may take some time. Any thoughts or, you know, insights from conversations you're having around, you know, what can we do to kind of rebuild that revenue? You mentioned, by the way, a 20% overall sort of down for March, which is not terrible. You know, some folks have probably suffered more than others. So there's probably a range there, So we need to stay creative to stay profitable and try to hang in there until that wave of demand comes. What are some of your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, right now, the most immediate thing we're seeing is operators turn their meeting rooms into private offices. And whether that's I've seen some people do bookable day offices. That's essentially they kept their meeting room and just said, this isn't bookable hourly anymore. You just book it a day at a time. That is one route I've seen people go, and also just taking out the conference room table, putting desk in there. Because if you can get, you know, reliable $1,000-$2,000 a month for that space, as opposed to two, you know, $50 meeting room bookings, obviously that's going to be ideal. And with the amount of meeting room bookings that have just dropped, there's going to be less of a demand in the coming months for those meeting rooms in the first place. So, you know, I know it's not ideal. Some spaces are really focused on meeting rooms and have such incredible spaces. So definitely don't get rid of all your meeting rooms or even most of them, but turning one or two or three of them into bookable by day or bookable by month entities really, you know, could help more in the immediate term alleviate some of those revenue issues.
Yep. And the you know, the short-term bookable lets you transition it back when you need to.
Exactly.
So it gives you that flexibility when you're ready to do that. I suspect also, right, totally. You can just flip it as long as you can figure out where to put your conference room table. Mine was, attached to the wall. So you have to get creative. But I think there will also be some appetite. You know, sometimes we don't offer those more flexible options because, you know, we want the known revenue. But I think with, you know, all the parents at home and, you know, people trying to figure out how to be productive and get a little time away from home, the day office could start to see some more demand. I know just kind of, you know, qualitatively, I've heard a lot of folks say their tours are really returning on the private offices.
Yes.
And so, you know, that's positive and certainly an indicator that there's demand for the private spaces, if not, you know, sort of shared meeting rooms and hot desks.
And that's what I'm hearing from a lot of operators that I'm talking to now, is that, people feel, you know, people feel safe going into a private office that has their team in it or people that they know, or they're closed off in that private office. They feel good about that. It's just going into meeting rooms or in some cases public open spaces with strangers they don't know is where there's some fear and distrust. So it's really, you know, promoting private, clean private offices right now. We're really seeing a lot, big trend for that in the industry, even more so than before. And Jamie, you and I have talked about it before, but the micro offices,
there's
one person, small dedicated offices, like those are looking more like a perfect idea more now than ever before. Great. So, you know, with that, a lot of times people ask, you know, how are you seeing people, you start charging for alternate revenue streams? What are some other revenue streams as a co-working owner that you can consider? And I've started to see a lot of spaces start creating virtual memberships. Now this virtual membership gives you kind of, I want to say, limited physical access to the community. It might give you credit hours to the meeting rooms or mailboxes, but more importantly, they're memberships that are designed to kind of keep the community connected to the space and keep them supported even when they're not physically there. They're also a way to generate revenue. Someone that has done an incredible job of this is CommonDesk, based out of Texas. They're an amazing brand, and they've created a really interesting work from home membership for their members. And what's very cool about it is it has a you pay what you want model. Now, I'm not suggesting everyone, you know, add that model in, but it really shows how much they care about their community. And they're trying to obviously create revenue from this, but at the same time, they understand what everyone's going through. And it's super important that the community stays connected. So that's a standout way I think people have been doing it. But I've seen virtual memberships more and more in the absence of the physical space.
I think it's a really interesting potential mindset shift. I think a lot of operators have tried that like light membership, the $25 a month, get invited to events. And some people gain some traction on that. And I think a lot of people don't, because it's just not that meaningful. And I think this has really forced us to rethink, what does that look like? What does that mean? A couple of episodes ago, actually, it's probably 5 or 6 episodes ago, Jessica Bomarito was on the podcast. And Michael, I don't know if you heard that episode, but she and I have been working with a group of operators from US and France and the UK who are in that mindset of, I'm going to make a meaningful virtual membership. Like, my community's been at home, and my community has the mindset that it's not about space. It's about the things, you know, being on a journey together and the things, you know, we can help each other do better by being connected. And, you know, just being really thoughtful about how to design that membership so that it's not just, you know, a bunch of yoga sessions on Zoom and happy hours. And, you know, but some of the things you talk about here on the slides, which again, you can download if you go to everythingcoworking.com and look for episode 155, training, networking opportunities, and you can leverage your members who have expertise for some of these things as well. And I don't want to go on too long about this, but I think we talked about it, and Michael, it was probably late year time when this session came on, but Jonathan O'Byrne from, oh gosh, Collective Works in Singapore, but okay, he was dialing in from a Hub Australia space.
That one was like the 3 a.m. Eastern.
Yeah, it was super late.
I was like, that one.
Yeah.
Was the DJ still up at that one?
No, the DJ was done by then. Happy hour had passed. So it was great to get the Australia contingency on live, though. That was really fun because we don't often, you know, do things at time zones that are, you know, different for us.
Yeah.
But he shared, you know, he really thinks that's going to be something that gets designed into the business model because it really can help, you know, protect against, you know, unexpected times like this. And even just, you know, the typical sort of virtual office, virtual mail component is something that even a lot of operators still don't leverage fully, but to kind of really even go a step further and add that second layer, which may not make sense for everyone. I think there are certain types of operators who really get into that. Yeah. So,
it's almost sort of like a club membership in some ways,
you know, totally.
It's a virtual club and people are finding interesting ways to add value into this. And I think you'll continue to see more spaces that add, you know, I mean, imagine if you were, you know, I'm seeing more and more of these niche co-working spaces, whether it's a therapy space. Yep. Imagine if it was a therapy space that offered like an hour of therapy a month with their virtual
member. Right. I mean,
that's just an example, but this is going to be so important and it's going to tie in with the community and the technology of your space at all as well. So
I love it because I think it has the potential, you know, to help the margin and help add opportunity on top of just the capacity of the physical space.
I've repeated this multiple times, but it's just something I'll continue to say. I think that the co-working spaces and flex office in general, just because of the emphasis on the individual member, are just so much better equipped, I think, to come back from this than traditional commercial office and commercial real estate. Between the trifecta of marketing, technology, and community, these things are going to help us excel above some of the other real estate operators to make people come to our spaces. And I really truly believe that this is even going to accelerate, you know, Jamie, what's that JLL article that everyone talks about?
Totally. The 30% by 2030. Yeah.
By 2030, co-working and flex office will make up 30% of the total, you know, office market. This event, I think, will only accelerate that. More and more offices are going to start turning into flex offices. And more and more people will just see a demand for this, you know, a need for this working. So the next thing I want to talk about, you know, I mentioned earlier, but to get people feeling comfortable coming back to your conference rooms and having their trust, it really is going to require a mix of both high tech and low tech tools across your space. And so I've seen a variety of these tools across the spaces that I've talked to. And so I thought I'd kind of just run down the list of some of the things I'm seeing spaces use that are helping instill trust in their customers to come back. And Jamie, I'll just go down the list. And then if there's one you want to dive into more, please stop me.
Love it.
So first we're going to talk about high tech tools. These are tools that require some level of technology to set up. The first one is going to be 24/7 controlled access to the space. One thing I've seen after this pandemic is a lot of operators and spaces are currently, and maybe it's changing now, but over the past couple of weeks and months have not allowed public users into their space. Yeah. Literally, they some of them have even de-staffed their front desk and relied on control access systems to manage access into the space. And when I say a controlled access system, I mean hooking up a system like some examples are Brevo, Keezy, Salto. These are used by a lot of different people in the industry, but essentially they let you connect your door access to your co-working space technology. So as soon as someone becomes a member of your space, they get a key on their phone and they can then gain access to your space automatically. And this extends to conference rooms, private offices, a variety of other resources. But in a time like this where, you know, sanitation and space access is more important than ever, these automated systems really make customers feel, oh, everyone in here is a, you know, verified member. I trust this space. It's locked down.
Yep. Even the conference room example, I used to be really in the camp of, you probably don't need the digital door access on the conference room unless you have a real use case for it.
Yep.
Like your conference rooms are, you know, down two hallways and 3 miles from the front desk. And, but this may be one of those times where it makes sense because to your point, you know, members know they're locked and they know there's the buffer zone and everybody feels comfortable about the process and people can't drop in and squat and, you know, staff doesn't know to clean. So it may make sense. And I think some of the pricing models are adjusting to support that because it used to be just so cost prohibitive to put these, you know, on all the doors.
I completely agree. I mean, even in the 2 or 3 years since I've installed them in my space, the costs have come down and it's making more and more sense to install these on offices and meeting rooms. But you don't need that. As if you just have one at the front door, that takes care of most of it. And it will, you know, being able to tell your customers, hey, you have access with your phone, really is a cool selling point. And it just makes them feel safe and trust you even more. So, you know, regardless of if you have it for all your rooms or one or two, it just instills confidence in your customers.
Yep.
So moving on from that, more touchless or low touch devices. From hand sanitizers at your front desk that you can swipe your hand under to automated doors, not ones that you use your phone to open, but you just, you know, wave your hand in front of and they automatically open, especially for bathroom doors. I think I was reading somewhere that, like, again, I don't know the specifics of it, but there's just a lot of places where these doors can be retrofitted to kind of, also not only talking about doors, but talking about the kitchen, coffee, you know, think about how many people are touching your coffee machine.
Yeah, and, you know, I don't want to think about it.
I'm not going to lie. These touchless coffee systems have been cost prohibitive. And so I hope that after this pandemic, the, you know, prices will start to become more realistic. And because this is going to become the new normal, people are going to want a food and beverage experience that is no one else is touching any of their stuff. And from, you know, the very beginning of it to the end, it needs to be thought out. Digital signage, you know, definitely across your space, having ways to advertise all of these messages is super important. And making sure that, you know, you're constantly putting up messages talking about your cleanliness routine or sanitation. Your members want to see that. They need to see that. And it's going to make them come back in. But digital signage, you know, sometimes people think it's not as important, but I'd argue now it's more important than ever because it's just a beacon of how clean you are if you do it right. So I've always been a big digital signage advocate.
Yeah. It's a time to over communicate for sure. Yeah. And that can help.
Yep. You have to, you know, visitor sign-in applications, you know, we were talking about some of those spaces that didn't have a community manager at the front desk during, you know, during the pandemic. And so instead they relied on visitor check-in systems. There's a variety of, systems that do this. Both third-party one and co-working softwares that have this built in directly. Next is booking systems. You know, any way that you can have people book rooms themselves without having to talk to your community manager in person is going to just reduce the risk of transmission of anything bad happening. So your members need to be able to book from their phones, from their computers very easily so that you don't have to get involved physically until the cleaning aspect of it. I'm seeing more people, putting in, HVAC systems or advertising their HVAC systems and putting in air purifiers or filters. I mean, it's interesting cause I've never imagined never seen a co-working space advertise that before.
Mm-hmm,
but I have to imagine now coming back from this, you're going to see that on the, you know, the one pager, you get a one pager when you go home and it says all of this, you know, safety and sanitary regulations on it.
Yep. Although I will say, you know, there's a lot of discussion about, you know, how to sort of fit this into the model. I mean, some of it, replacing your HVAC system is not necessarily simple. And, you know, Jerome Chang, I think, was saying, you know, Mara's been issuing sort of the A+, you know, you get the A+ grade for doing these things. And Jerome was like, I might be like a B+, you know, I'm going to do things that I can manage, but probably not replace the HVAC system unless your landlord is willing to do it with you. And I think over time, you know, maybe we'll see more of that expectation becomes more common, but
same thing with
the automatic door openers. It's like, you know, if it's a common door, it's not going to make sense for you to pay for it, but maybe the landlord will do it. And that can, you know, bathroom on the common areas. You can, Mara has shown, like you can get handles that go under the door so that you can pull it open with your foot. So that could go on your low-tech list.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great idea. And yeah, you know, you're completely right. By no means am I advocating for every single one of these. This would be super expensive.
Yeah.
These are just ideas I pulled from the dozens and dozens of workspace I've been talking to that are all implementing the variations of these solutions. So it definitely, you know, and it's going to require a combination of these high-tech, generally more expensive solutions and these low-tech solutions to really get the desired effect across to your members. It's just about over communication.
Yeah.
And so, no, you're completely right. It's just important that you have a couple of these or considering a couple of these for your space. I've heard some spaces talk about disinfectant misting systems, which is very interesting. And also, I heard someone yesterday talking about how they wanted to create a voice activated conference room. So literally a touchless conference room. So you walk in and say, you know, Alexa, turn on my TV or whatnot. And,
totally.
And again, you know, we laugh at that now, but this pandemic is only going to accelerate. It's already accelerated video conferencing technology. You have to think about the other things that will be accelerated due to this. And yeah, I mean, voice control in conference rooms sounds gimmicky now, but 5 to 10 years, I have to imagine that's where we're headed. So those are some of the high-tech tools. Jumping down to more of the low-tech tools, but just as equally as important. One, providing/requiring face mask. Now, this is a debate, you know, I know, Jamie, that is going on. I'm interested to hear your thoughts on this before I dive into it.
Oh, boy. Yeah, I mean, I think that's important for this conversation. I mean, you know, Mike, you said a lot of these are sort of crowdsourced inputs on what operators are doing, and not all of them are doing all of these things. And I think there's just a tremendous variation around the world in terms of what members expect and want. And I think, you know, part of the discussion is, you know, how do you sort of match, you know, how the owner wants to conduct business and when the members, you know, might not be on the same plane, or you have members that, you know, there's some variation. You know, it's, you know, some people think it's not helpful. I find it helpful to be in an area where the guidelines are just really clear.
Yeah.
Like someone else is telling us what to do. Again, from a political perspective, that may not always be preferred, but I can say, like, look, it's required, you know, so it's easy. And in places where it's not required, that's a lot of the conversation, you know, for operators that I'm hearing. I'm sure you're hearing the same thing. It's like, well, what are the policies? How do you decide what the policies are? Where are the masks required? Where are they not required? It can come down to a really local individual decision. And, you know, it's a challenging time to be in our role to have to kind of choose these guidelines.
No, you're completely right. And it's going to vary based on where you are. And I think the most important thing is having a rule that you've decided on, and having that, you know, that rule strict, having that rule out in the open so everyone can see it, and then policing it. You know, if you implement that rule, you have to police it, which isn't as always fun. But again, that's what's going to build trust. I know I keep on saying trust, but if you have a rule that no one's following, who's to say people aren't following other rules within your space? And they're, you know, so...
I think some of the positive things I've heard a lot of operators say they've done extensive outreach to their members.
Yeah.
And I think that's really helpful if you're in an area where it's unclear what preferences are, you know, do your market research and talk to folks. And then that's also sending a signal that you care and that you're trying to do the best thing and keep them safe, but also kind of respect, you know, some personal choice. So it's not easy, but I think making folks, you know, see that you're doing your best and you're trying to make a decision that works for most people.
And I don't think it hurts to have, I know that they're not cheap, but I don't think it hurts to have some face mask on hand just in case there's scenarios where people don't have them or issues arrive. You know, having a stock of 15 or 20 of those, I think for the next 6 months just is not, depending on your space, is not going to be a bad idea. So, strict sick rules for members and employees. This isn't something that's necessarily related to co-working. I think this is a cultural shift. I hopefully think we'll see across the U.S. And the world. But, you know, I know in America, people are like, I'm sick. I'm going to work through it anyway. You know, you've all
totally
that have come into work and they're sneezing and, you know,
it's like the martyr thing. It's like, I'm busy. I have too much to do. My manager expects me to be in. Yeah. That's been me a million times.
I definitely understand and respect circumstances where you have to work. And I'm not trying to downplay that, but I just know that there's times when people come into work and they probably shouldn't. And I think that after COVID, that's going to change. If you see anyone sneeze or cough in your office, the entire office is going to look at them.
Totally. Right. I almost feel like it used to be, you had to be so sick that your manager would, there was no question.
Oh, Michael. Yeah.
Exactly. There's no question. And now it'll be the opposite. Like,
yes.
You sneeze one time,
you're
get
out
of here.
For 2 weeks.
He's totally right. Right.
So, you know, I say that with, it goes back to the rules and the policing, you know, communicate to your members, guys, if you are sick or you feel sick, quarantine yourself for 14 days. You know, same for your employees as well. They need to do the exact same thing. That's just what makes the most sense. And you just got to have those rules out there strict. So that's going to be an interesting culture change. We'll see, you know, in a year from now, if that's still sticking, but I kind of hope it does. You know, we'll see. Enforcing conference room size limits. As people start getting back into conference rooms, you're going to have to enforce, you know, limits on a 10 person room is now a 4 person room and stuff like that. That has to happen and you have to start socially distancing people more, just so people feel safe and secure. Hand sanitizer stations, those are pretty self-explanatory. Stickers and directional walking paths. I'm actually seeing this more and more as a low-tech solution. You know, stairs might have arrows going up them in different, hopefully you're always going upstairs on the right side. But, you know, you're going to see these multi-directional arrows more often. I see them in most places I go to. There's stickers.
Grocery store.
Grocery stores. So that, those are not too expensive, but again, you know, customers see that and they say, hey, this place is taking efforts and they respect that. They care about that. Elevator capacity limits, something some spaces are going to have to think hard about. And this is a whole building problem, not necessarily just a co-working space problem, but it's going to affect co-working spaces that are in higher stories. That's just, you know, the fact of it. Removing chairs and furniture, you know, in those open spaces, traditionally, co-working spaces have crammed a bunch of desks and cool furniture together. You need to think about, you know, self-contained units away from each other so that people can go to them and not get disturbed by other people. You don't have to throw away your furniture or buy new furniture. You just need to rearrange it so that people feel safe and comfortable in it.
Or put the tape. Some people don't have storage. Put the tape on it or the plant on it or, you know, the reserved.
It also makes people feel good. It's like, it's not perfect, but look, they're doing.
Exactly. Working. Again, those visual signals is, you know, a lot of what you're talking about so that people feel like, okay, this place is being intentional.
Yep. And then this last one, you know, this is somewhat controversial, but just be careful with your events. Over the next quarter, try to have virtual components so people can join in, but just be cautious about having too many people in an enclosed area for obvious reasons.
I think events, especially when when it's like a happy hour, a socially distanced happy hour, has a downward spiral really quickly.
Yeah.
Well, I can't drink without my mask on, and then you forget about the 6 feet. And
it's tough because we love them. I mean, I was very disappointed to not, you know, about the GWA this year. Like, I'm very disappointed.
I know.
We can't go there. I want to see everybody.
The 80s party.
And just this simple act of like hugging people. Like, I miss you. You miss seeing others. And so we're all looking forward to that. But just events in Q3 is just something you should be cautious about. That's all I will say. And then, you know, to kind of round it out, you know, people do not have to go back into a co-working space the same way that someone has to go back into a corporate office. I was talking to my girlfriend, you know, just yesterday, and she's like, man, in August, we're being forced to go back to our
office.
And again, that might change, but it's interesting because co-working spaces, no one's forced to go into.
Totally, right.
It's a conscious decision that they make. And people will come back when the trust is established. It's just, we have to work from the tour all the way to, you know, thanking them for being a member at our space. We have to instill that trust in them and make sure that, you know, they feel more confident in us than ever before.
Michael, I'm wondering, I don't know if you're going to get to this or not, or if you've seen it, but we've had some conversations in my groups about being a little more flexible than we have before. Like, it used to be, you know, no way are we letting people share a dedicated desk. Yeah. Like, the whole childcare issue, and, you know, part of the challenge is like the pain point is often there, but parents are trying to figure out, well, how do I get out of the house when my kid's here and there's no summer camp? And have you seen, you know, folks, I don't know if you could tell in your system, like new memberships that let people kind of share a desk? People, I suppose, from the same family, if you want to manage the hygiene, but.
Yeah, unfortunately, I don't have that specific data, but I definitely know people are now being more flexible ever than before in terms of those memberships. Again, I mean, it's interesting, you know, we joke about, you know, dogs barking in the background on calls, but that has become normal and part of everyday life. And people are having to make these concessions from the strict work regimen we've known our whole lives, until now, this work, it's just a home balance, you know, it's not like a work life balance. It's just like a home, you know, working. I feel like you work more when you work from home.
Yes.
And so people are making more concessions, you know, people's personal lives inadvertently are coming more into the work world. And so co-working spaces are going to have to be more cognizant of that. And you know, I think that's going to be somewhat permanent. Even as we go back to the office, more companies are just going to let people work from home. You know, it's like, you know, Facebook is even saying, and a lot of tech companies are saying, hey, if you want to work from home, you're allowed to going forward. Obviously, yeah. Well, you know, they'll have to readjust salaries based on where they live and stuff, but all those people are co-working, you know, members,
candidates,
all the people that elect
totally.
To work from home are going to go find co-working spaces. So it's a win-win for our industry once we get over this initial shock.
Yep, exactly. I think there's just a gap of all that settling out, and then that'll come.
Yep. So, I mean, one of the last things that I briefly wanted to touch on is one way that Office R&D specifically kind of is addressing this. And as I mentioned, there's a variety of co-working softwares that are all hopefully making changes in response to COVID. I know that we've been focused on this, but the way people interact with co-working spaces has fundamentally changed. And people are now looking towards spaces that have the correct combination of technology, you know, sanitation, to really feel confident in using them. Now, I'd say now more than ever, it's important that your space has some sort of mobile app so that someone could actually book a room from their phone without having to talk or interact with anybody else. So, you know, over the past couple months, we've worked on a couple key features like push notifications to phones. So as an operator, you can very easily send a direct push notification announcing new COVID regulations to everybody. And they're going to receive that, you know, on their phone as a message from your space. That's something that we had a lot of requests for and we just implemented. To help supplement virtual services, we've created something called Video Rooms. And essentially, this is a way from within your members portal, you can actually hop on an impromptu video call. Huh. So if you want to have like a book club or a virtual meeting, Jamie, have you seen this yet?
No, I think it's brilliant. Yeah.
But essentially, yeah, hop onto, instead of Zoom, hop onto a quick member portal call, and it's just people you know that are part of that community. Whether it's buying services from a digital shop, you know, and better access to billing details, and messaging, we've really made an effort to try to create technology that'll make people feel safe in coming back to the office. And again, I think from us and from many other of the people, the partners in the prop tech space, a huge focus has shifted, you know, to communication and safety for your members so they feel confident coming back.
I think one other aspect of the technology piece is you know, again, eventually when this wave of folks that were, you know, in offices that didn't have a need for co-working spaces, but now do, many of them will be used to technology like this. You know, they've had access to super easy ways to, you know, book meeting rooms, and the meeting rooms are nicely equipped with good technology. So, I mean, some of them, you know, will come from small businesses that won't have all that stuff, yeah. But some of them will come from, you know, will have a bar. And so being ready with technology that kind of meets people, you know, at the level that they've experienced, I think is also a good idea.
It's interesting you bring that up, because over the past 3 months, we've actually been talking with a number of companies that are not traditional co-working companies, that are other space companies that are looking to use our software to integrate their employees back into the workspace.
Oh yeah, booking that makes sense.
Booking hot desk, seeing availability of when offices are there. So they're not necessarily using the billing functions, but just the space management communication functions. People haven't traditionally had that in a workplace. But now for all workplaces, not just co-working, that's everyone's thinking about it. So that's just going to be super important for all aspects of business over the next couple of years, is tracking that and, you know, keeping it safe. That was the end of my slides. I know I've continued to reiterate this, but it's really just about instilling trust in your customers through your marketing, through your community, and through the technology at your space. Once that trust is instilled in your customers, they will return. Your customers want to come to your co-working space. They just want to feel comfortable when they're there, and they want to know that they'll be comfortable. And that's really what it's about, is creating that comfort through a variety of ways so they come back in force.
Yeah. And I also just think, you know, all these actions are things we can control. So, you know, I think my advice to people is like, get your, you know, marketing, your sales funnel, like firing on all cylinders, be ready for the demand, get all the things in place so that when that, you know, comes in, some of that we can't control. We have to wait for people to put themselves into the funnel and be ready to come back. But we can be as prepared as possible to give them what they're looking for when they are ready to show up, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, you have to imagine there is going to be so much pent-up demand. People that have been working at home for the past, I've been working at home for the past 4 months, and starting to go a little crazy.
And yeah.
a lot of people across America are like that. And a lot of them are not going to return to their normal office in a normal way, you know? Yep. And so, I have to imagine that at some point, whether it's a little bit later this year or early, there's just going to be a huge rush of new co-working leads that might have never used a co-working space before and need and crave that space. So I'm excited for that.
I know, I'm excited too. And sometimes I feel bad saying I'm excited, because I know there's a level of pain that everybody's experiencing right now and trying to manage through it. So we recognize that, and Michael was an operator, and I know I'm sure all the time you think, oh my gosh, this is, you know, you can empathize with how it would feel to be managing through this. So, but we're here to sort of help you look forward and think about what's next. And we both think, you know, co-working Kool-Aid, we think it's positive.
30% by 2030. It's going to be right. Sooner than that. Yeah, exactly. Absolutely.
Michael, thank you for joining us today. And for anybody who kind of jumped in the middle, Michael walked through some slides with some good data and notes on it. Those, you can download the video version with the slides in our discussion at everythingcoworking.com/episodes/155.
Nice. Got it.
Awesome. Thank you again, Michael.
Have a good one. Bye, Jamie.